It is a damp spring day, 2004. I'm sitting at my desk in my apartment in Oakland, staring down at a blank sheet of paper. I'm writing a letter of apology to my brother. He says I offended him during a recent visit to his home, but I can't see what I did wrong. We haven't spoken in months. He's my only sibling, and I yearn to be close to him. And so I am writing a letter of apology to my brother. Looking at the empty surface of the paper, I try to form sentences of regret for what I have done. But only anger rises, and all I can think about is how unreasonable he is. I set the unwritten letter aside and leave it for another day. Why is it so hard to simply say, "I'm sorry"? Last Monday marked the beginning of the High Holy Days with Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. They culminate next Wednesday evening on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. During these holiest of days, people seek forgiveness from those they have harmed because we have all been careless in our words and our deeds. Jewish wisdom names three types of forgiveness. The first, melicha, is for everyday situations. It's the easiest to ask for and the easiest to grant. The second is selicha. It's more serious. It calls for an expansion of the heart. It is an act of mercy, empathy, and compassion. The third is kapara. This is the ultimate forgiveness. It comes from on high or deep within us, unbidden, after we do all the hard work of confronting ourselves and seeking forgiveness from others. The need for apology rises again and again in our daily interactions with others. Oh, I'm sorry to be late with this report. I'm sorry I forgot your birthday. I'm sorry I didn't return your call sooner. The everyday apologies are not difficult because our self-worth isn't in jeopardy. We expect to make mistakes, and we expect other people to forgive us, and vice versa. This is mekila. We say sorry, the other person says no problem, or if you're in Brooklyn, forget about it. There's no heart-wrenching apology, no transformation of the soul. It's just a simple pardon. Selicha, the second type of forgiveness, takes a little more effort. What is required here is a widening of the heart and a willingness to step into another's shoes. We've seen dramatic examples of situations calling for this type of forgiveness. For example, on his deathbed, Gandhi forgave his assassin. Nelson Mandela, imprisoned for 27 years, forgave his captors. And 2 years ago, a small Amish community in Pennsylvania astounded the world when they forgave the gunman who killed 5 children and injured 5 others in their one-room schoolhouse. A Gallup poll of 1,000 Americans found that 94% of them hold forgiveness to be a very important value. Yet less than half of them say that they actually make forgiveness a part of their daily practice. This survey was done in 1988, but I doubt that the answers would be any different if taken today. So what keeps us from doing something that we believe is so valuable? Those people who posted their apologies on the Project Forgiveness blog, what keeps them from saying "I'm sorry" to a real live human being rather than hiding in anonymity in cyberspace? What kept me from writing that letter to my brother? I think it all boils down to fear. Fear that I'll lose my sense of self-worth. Fear that I'll lose my dignity. If it's a situation where I've wronged someone and it's very clear that it's my fault, then by apologizing, I will be revealed to be a very bad person. On the other hand, if it's a situation where the other person and I have wronged each other, then my fear is that if I apologize first, it will let the other person off the hook, and I will look weak and vulnerable, and I will be wrong. After weeks of avoiding that blank piece of paper, I overcame at least a little bit of that fear. I sat down again, wrote the letter, and sent it. Later, I saw that it was a half-hearted, grudging apology. It was more like a rationale for what I had done, cast in a light that made me look reasonable. Something was still stopping me from opening my heart enough to offer a genuine apology. Maimonides, the 12th century Spanish philosopher, offered a practice of forgiveness that includes these four steps. First, recognize what I did, express regret, resolve to change my behavior in the future, and then reconcile with the other so that the relationship can be deepened and hearts can be changed. The practice begins with telling our stories, telling the truth to ourselves about our part and our responsibility in the events. It's not surprising that the first step in repairing relationships with others should begin this way. This wisdom can be found in almost all of the world's religions. These traditions urge us to look into the reality of our own brokenness as a pathway to wholeness. And it makes sense to start here because our relationship with others will never be better than our relationship with ourselves. Realizing the full significance of what we've done doesn't necessarily then make us want to rush out and apologize to the person we've hurt. Actually, just the opposite can happen. We can be so ashamed of our actions that we would rather post an apology on the blog than face the person. So, there was no response to that letter I sent to my brother, of course. After many months of no communication, I find myself in front of another blank sheet of paper. This time, I am writing a letter to myself. The paper becomes a mirror, and now I see that wholeness comes not from overcoming brokenness, but rather from accepting it. I tell myself the painful truth of what really happened, just the facts, without the excuses. I also tell the truth of how I've been hurt by my brother over the years, about my resentment of the complicated family dynamics that put the male child on a pedestal. I put myself in his shoes. I imagine times when being on that pedestal must have been difficult for him. I can feel my compassion for him grow. And then I ask myself, the deepest part of myself, to forgive me, that part of me that goes beyond ego, that knows that I am more than the sum of my careless acts. This is the third type of forgiveness, kapara. This is the Hebrew word for atonement, at-one-ment, literally meaning the state of being at one with self, with others, with God. Rabbi Irwin Kula, in his book called Yearnings, describes kapara as the forgiveness that cannot be earned or asked for by others. It is an inner experience of integrating our transgressions into a more expanded self. When we are at one with our deepest selves, we can be free from fear. We can know that there is a part of ourselves that is bigger than the unkind things that we do. We can know that we are not our misdeeds. Then that expanded self is big enough to be humble, to actually speak an authentic apology. After recognition, the second practice of forgiveness is the expression of regret. This is where you say, "It gave me great pain when I looked back and saw what I had done to you. I really saw the cost of my actions, not only to you, but also to me." We don't often witness apologies like this. So many of the public apologies that we see from our leaders or hear from our leaders sound hollow and self-serving. One notable exception is from Jesse Jackson, expressing his regret for using a derogatory word to describe Jews. He apologized, saying, "That was not my true self. Charge it to my head and not to my heart. My head, so limited in its finitude, my heart, which is boundless in love for the human family." Sometimes a person wants very much to express genuine regret, but the other person has passed away or refuses to hear the apology. This happened to a man serving a sentence in a maximum security prison in New York State. He was participating in a 3-day workshop called Alternatives to Violence. There he heard a woman speak of being raped while in Mexico and then forgiving her assailant. During a break in the program, he approached her, and here is how she described what happened next. In the hallway, he began wringing his hands nervously. "I don't know if I can do this," he said. "It's okay," I said. "Whatever it is, it's okay." He took a deep breath and asked, "Would you be a surrogate for me for a moment?" I had no idea what he had in mind, but I felt safe. And so I said, "Yes." Tears began to run down his cheeks as he spoke. "A long time ago, I hurt a woman very badly. I have tried to apologize to her family, but they want nothing to do with me. I respect that and do not want to hurt them any more than I already have. But I want you to know how deeply sorry I am for what I did." He paused to take a break. "And how deeply sorry I am for what was done to you." I was speechless. He was obviously trying very hard not to fall to pieces in the middle of that corridor. After a moment, this giant of a man quietly asked, "Do you think you could forgive me?" "Yes," I said. Sometimes it's easier to forgive the stranger than to forgive our own children, our parents, our sisters. By the time I saw my brother last Christmas, I was ready to once again say, "I'm sorry, please forgive me." This time in a way that would express my deepest regrets with sincerity and humility. He said no. There was no expansion of the heart, no deepening of relationship. The Jewish sages tell us to try three times to ask for forgiveness, and so I will try again. And if no forgiveness is forthcoming from my brother, I will still know that I have been forgiven by the part of me that is larger than my own ego, the part of me that is large enough not to keep score of wrongs. For me and my brother, there is no reconciliation, at least not yet. Nonetheless, the relationship continues, even in this broken state. Yom Kippur was the day that Moses brought down the second set of tablets from Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments. Yes, there were two sets of tablets. Moses brought down the first one, but when he saw all of the Israelites worshiping the golden calf, violating the first of these commandments, he threw down the tablets in anger, smashing them into pieces. He went back up the mountain for another 40 days and created a new set of tablets. Moses then put the broken pieces of the old in with the new. He put them in the ark. We must do likewise. In that Gallup poll in which 94% of Americans said it was important to forgive, a second question revealed that most all of them said that they need help from the outside to do this forgiveness. And this is where the community comes in. Richard Rubinstein wrote in After Auschwitz that one of the most important functions of the atonement ritual is that through communal confession and acknowledgement of guilt, the penitent is assured that his is the shared predicament of humankind. We are not alone. He goes on to observe that without the uniting ritual, our feelings of guilt and shame fragment the human community into individuals who must hide their deepest selves from one another. Let us continue to grow into a community that reveals rather than hides our deepest selves. Let us do so now by reciting the Litany of Atonement, a responsive reading written by the Reverend Rob Eller Isaacs. And instead of reading out of the hymnal, it is in the hymnal, but instead of reading out of the hymnal, there are only three things to remember, so I think you can do this. I will lead with a statement, and then you will respond with these words. We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time we have struck out in anger without just cause, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For losing sight of our unity, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. And for those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. May it be so. Amen.